How's it, everyone? Welcome back to our second round table episode.
On the rectangle table. We know. We're working on it.
We're working on a lot of stuff. A lot of people out there had a bunch of good ideas after the last round table episode about things we could do, things we could implement. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to do some of them, bring on other people from the team, bring on maybe some of the guests.
Yeah.
Get an actual round table, as you mentioned. Obviously, now is not the time to be implementing a lot of stuff, but this is a new series for us. It was very popular last time. We're almost certainly going to keep doing it. And as you know, we're always improving our content. This show will be no different.
Yeah, and a big thanks to everyone that comments on game nights, people that have nice, awesome things to say, as well as comment on what's happening in the game. It's what fuels these episodes. So this week, we are going to be talking about, of course, the episode that we just released yesterday.
Yeah.
Or not yesterday, a few days ago, whenever this comes out.
It's yesterday for us, but like 4 or 5 days ago for you. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with the roundtable episode, this is going to be us talking about or responding to the most asked questions or comments or whatever that are on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. There's rules mistakes that we made or stuff we didn't explain very well, things like that.
Things we skipped over, all that good stuff.
Yeah, speaking of which, before we get started, I wanted to say we've been getting a number of questions through that process about the COVID-19 crisis, how it's affecting us, our channel, our content, things like our recent Kickstarter as well. Wanted to note that the last couple of pieces of content we've put out, the last couple of episodes of the podcast, Game Nights, were recorded a long time ago. This Game Nights episode, the Attack of the Fans episode, was recorded in October.
Yes.
Because of Ikoria and the Commander product, we've been backlogging a lot of stuff, getting ready, so we haven't actually had a chance to address COVID-19 and all of that. We're going to talk about that near the end of this episode, though.
Yep, so stay tuned if you want to hear about that stuff. But let's get right into it. The episode that we are discussing today on the Game Nights Roundtable is The Attack of the Fans.
Dun-dun-dun. Yeah, that's better. That's better. You know, okay, here's a little inside thing to start stuff off. We briefly laughed about, we didn't actually consider, but we quote-unquote considered naming the episode The Phantom Menace.
Yes, for all of you Star Wars Episode 1 fans out there.
That was Murph's contribution, which
all
we all laughed at.
Yeah,
we went with Attack of the Fans. Let's start with some rule stuff. Warning. Spoilers ahead. It's impossible to talk about the episode in this manner without spoiling it. So if you haven't seen Game Night's Attack of the Fans yet, stop this video, go watch it. Come back. Otherwise, we're going to ruin the whole thing for you.
Yeah, and hold your questions not in the comments because maybe we'll answer them. Who knows?
Yeah. one other thing we always like to say here. If we bring up your comment and we refute it or disagree with it or clarify some things, we're not calling anybody stupid. The questions are all good questions. In fact, I like to say if we're getting a question a lot, even if we didn't misrepresent it or make an error ourselves in the show, we did make an error in explaining it. Obviously, we didn't anticipate that there would be a misunderstanding or we didn't articulate or communicate things right. well enough. So even the questions where we're like, no, we did it right, I still take responsibility in that we explained it poorly. So this is a good chance for us to clarify some stuff.
The question wouldn't be asked if there wasn't a good reason to ask it.
So this first one is the one we were asked the most, I think. It's Rurik Thar and commander damage. So a lot of people were confused. They thought, hey, Millie, she's taken 24 damage off the Rurik Thar trigger.
I will tap 4 mana, and I will play Thran Dynamo. So even though it's my Rurik Thar, it still triggers. I'll take 6 damage. I'll go to 20.
This is going to hurt. I'm going to cast Cunning Evasion.
That'll trigger Rurik Thar, and you will take 6 damage.
So much damage.
Shouldn't she be dead? Because if you take 21 commander damage, you die. So Rurik Thar has a trigger that deals 6 damage to a player if they cast a non-creature spell. So this is a common misconception with commander damage.
A lot of commanders have ways to deal damage outside of combat.
Yuriko does too.
Yeah, Yuriko does as well. But commander damage is specifically tied to combat damage by that commander. That's why you have Voltron commanders. That's how they work, is they're doing combat damage. And Rurik Thar's is a triggered ability.
Right. So similar to Nekusar, Yuriko, except when they're actually attacking and hitting a player through combat damage, none of that other damage is considered combat damage. It's just regular damage.
Yeah, and we actually, this is something that we always talk about on the show, is trying to clarify that, because it's like, what happens if I steal the Rurik Thrall like I did and then hit someone with it? Does that count as my commander damage or theirs? And so there's a lot of different complications with that. But yeah, so that's obviously a very common question.
Just to answer that question, the commander damage stays with the card. So if Jimmy
yes.
hits somebody with the Rurik Thar, it's commander damage the same as if Matthew hits somebody with the Rurik Thar, if it's combat damage, again. Okay.
All right, Yuriko and commander tax. This one came up a bunch. People were wondering why Millie didn't have to pay extra every time she ninjutsu'd out Yuriko from the command zone.
I'm going to do something unusual.
Ooh, I like it.
Okay. I'm going to play my commander.
Like, just cast her?
I'm just going to cast her.
I didn't even know you could do that with Yuriko.
I'm full of surprises.
And that the reason is that Yuriko is one of the very special commanders in that they have an alternate casting cost that lets them be cheated onto the battlefield, basically, and never having to pay the extra for commander tax. Another similar commander is Derevi.
Yeah.
Who has, you can do 4 mana to put, just flash it or put it onto the battlefield without having to pay extra.
Yeah, specifically, at one point, Millie plays Yuriko, casts mm-hmm. Yuriko. And she even says, this is abnormal, but I'm going to do it. And Yuriko had already been on the battlefield and died. And so a lot of people were like, well, shouldn't she have to pay 5 for Yuriko? Commander tax only cares about how many times you've cast your commander from the command zone. Yuriko had never been cast from the command zone in the game because she had been ninjutsu'd onto the battlefield,
right.
which is not the same as casting it. So commander tax did not apply to her even casting it out of the command zone that time. And then, of course, like Jimmy said, anytime she ninjutsu's it, there's no commander tax applied to ninjutsu. That's an activated ability, has a cost, and one of the reasons Yuriko is so, so good and kind of broken is because you just never have to pay commander tax on her, really, because you're ninjutsuing her out all the time.
Like a real ninja.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. A lot of people ask this one, too. Why didn't Josh steal stuff before the Willbreaker got Pongified?
Right, so Josh plays Willbreaker in the early turns in the game. I know just how powerful this card is. I have a Pongify removal spell in my hand, so I pointed at the thing, and people were like, Josh, why didn't you steal some stuff before it got Pongified?
And because that Willbreaker is too scary, I'm sorry, Josh, I'm going to tap one, cast Pongify, targeting Ooh. Your Willbreaker.
Ah, it's going to die. So I'm going to get a, what, 2-2?
3/3 green ape creature.
I'm fine with that.
So, yeah, the thing is, Willbreaker, and we covered this later in the episode, so maybe people were commenting before they got to the point
that happens that quite a lot, it. So no fault there, guys.
Yeah, but when Willbreaker dies, it says on the card, then anything that you've stolen through Willbreaker just goes back to the owner's control. So I felt it was just kind of pointless to steal things there. People were like, why didn't you take Yuriko or whatever?
Yeah.
Because it's just going to immediately, like, steal it. Pongify resolves. Goes back.
Yeah.
That's just creating editing issues for everybody. So there was no reason to really do that kind of thing. I can see an argument where sometimes you might want to do this, though, because it will give summoning sickness to that creature. So let's say Jimmy had, like, a big creature that I didn't want to attack, then maybe I could steal it, and then I would have it, and then it would go back to Jimmy, but now I would have summoning sickness, right?
Yeah. Another thing that might have come up, it's like, let's say the mana elf that could tap for mana,
yeah.
and Josh has, like, Anger in the Graveyard on the Mountain. He could steal it, tap it, and when it comes back to me, it's tapped. So you could, there are certain scenarios where stealing it would have actually mattered.
Yeah, but in that particular case, just looked around and said, eh, it's not worth it for the post-production headaches that it will cause,
because
it won't actually do anything in the game. Yeah.
Okay, this one came up quite a bit. Why did Jimmy not use his Meteor Golem on Rurik Thar? This is an interesting one. This is, I think, right before the Omniscience play.
Yeah, let's set the stage here. So Jimmy has Omniscience out and Vedalken Ori. Millie has promised not to counter anything during his turn because mm-hmm. of the deal they made. We'll talk about that later. So it goes to Millie's turn, and she goes to cast Coastal Breach. Now, we learn later that Jimmy has a Pact of Negation in hand, because he uses it
later on,
on a Trotter or something.
Yeah, Trotter.
But we know he's got one at this point. However, he's at 6 life, and he has taken control of Matthew's Rurik Thar. So if he Pact of Negations the Coastal Breach, he'll die to the Rurik Thar trigger. So he can't do that. Now, a lot of people in the comments were like, you have Vedalken Ori and Omniscience, and we also know you have Meteor Golem.
Mm-hmm.
Due to it being played earlier or later,
yeah,
whatever.
This is the second time I think I was going to play it in this game.
So everyone's like, why don't you just Meteor Golem, Rurik Thar, now it's not there, then you can Pact of Negation, Coastal Breach, and now you've still got Omniscience and Vedalken Ori, and you'll be fine.
I will also cast a Meteor Golem. When it enters the battlefield, I will target Thrasios to blow that up.
Okay, Thrasios will die. Almost made it back to my hand.
So close.
This is funny because on the day we're shooting it, this actually came up. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy, you were the one that was like, oh, I can't do that because...
Yeah. Unfortunately, Meter Golem is only things that your opponents control.
So I remember on the day he was like, dang it, I can't actually do this.
Yeah, I put myself in a real sticky situation. And I think the real mistake here is like, should I have taken the Rurik Thar earlier? Considering Rurik Thar doesn't care who casts the non-creature spell, it still does the damage to them.
But at that point you took Rurik Thar, you didn't know all the cards in everybody's hand that we know at this point, right? So it would have been hard to predict.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I couldn't have cast my own Meteor Golem to kill my own thing because it was under my control. My opponents didn't control it. So at the end of the day, I just kind of I bamboozled myself.
Who would have thought that the fact that Meteor Golem can't hit your own stuff would basically cause you not to win that game?
Yeah.
Because I think if you did that play, if it was legal and you could do it, you probably run away with the victory having being basically at that point unopposed with Omniscience and Vidalcan Aurea.
Full control, yeah.
Yeah, and tons of cards in your hand. But the Rurik Thar was basically the only thing that kept you in check, stopping you from casting a lot of your spells.
Hurt Jimmy's spells!
Enchantment bad! We'll talk about that later, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is an interesting line. A lot of people saw it. We saw it on the day, too. But unfortunately, Meteor Golem just has that one pesky, two pesky words, opponent controls. All right.
Oh, this next one. There's a lot of equipment running around this game, and creatures taking, being given to other people are stolen by other players. And people were wondering, when you stole the Soul of the Harvest, it had a Loxodon Warhammer attached to it. But the Warhammer still belongs to Matthew. It just comes along with the creature when you steal it. So why do you gain the life? Because earlier, Matthew also had a Sword of Light and Shadow on that I used, and he was able to return a creature from his graveyard because of the text on the card. So how does that work, Josh?
Then I will go to combat, and I will swing at you, Matthew, with those five creatures.
I have no blockers, so I take
17 damage.
Take 17 damage.
Go to 18, and I gain 9.
Oh.
Yeah, super interesting, right? Because we have multiple creatures getting stolen with equipment.
With equipment, yeah.
But the equipment's still owned by the original owner, even though the creature's not. And I understand why this gets totally confusing. So Loxodon Warhammer is a little different than Sword of Light and Shadow. Mm-hmm. Because Loxodon Warhammer, and this is also weird because this is one of the few cards in Magic that they've sort of errated post-fact. So the original copies of Loxodon Warhammer don't give the creature lifelink, but older... or newer copies do. The difference here is that Loxodon Warhammer gives lifelink to the creature.
Mm-hmm.
So Soul of the Harvest now has lifelink. When I steal it, I control Soul of the Harvest, even though Matthew controls the Loxodon Warhammer. But the Warhammer itself is not gaining the life. It's giving the life gain ability to the creature, which I control. So totally confusing, totally understand. There's an old card called Spirit Link,
mm-hmm.
which lifelink is based off of. And the fact that early Magic has these cards that are sort of similar to Lifelink, but aren't the exact same, does cause a lot of confusion. Spirit Link uses the stack where Lifelink does not.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah. So anyway, you really need to Google the rules to understand the differences between those two things. And Loxodon Warhammer itself is a weird case because it used to have basically what Spirit Link is,
yeah.
and now has Lifelink. But the gist of it is if something gives the creature an ability, then the controller of that creature gets it. But but the Sword of Light and Shadow doesn't do that.
And we sometimes will show, you know, on the creature card in Game Nights, we'll add the text to it. That's because that's what's actually happening. If you were playing on Arena or MTGO, the card itself, the creature that was equipped, would say lifelink on it because the equipment Sword of Light and Shadow, just read the text. It has a little bit different stuff. The ability that happens when you hit with it is something that's attached to the sword as opposed to the creature.
And the Sword of Light and Shadow, confusingly, does give protection to the creature. So it has sort of both things going on. Yeah, totally interesting. I understand why it's confusing.
25 years of Magic leads to things like this. So
that is the way it worked. Okay, here's a mistake that is real, and we actually did make a rules mistake here. I made a rules mistake. So at the end of the...
No, Josh, we made the rules mistake. It's a group effort.
At the end of the game, on the very last turn or the second to last turn, when I'm stealing all the stuff from Matthew, I'm using Fate Stitcher to untap his creatures, and then that triggers Willbreaker, so I steal them. And then I'm using another effect to untap the Fate Stitcher to do it again. Problem is, Fate Stitcher had Lightning Greaves on it at the time, which gives it Shroud.
Then I'm going to tap the Market Festival land, so that's 4 mana. I'll play Thousand Year Elixir. And then I will pay 1 to untap the Fate Stitcher. And then I will tap the Fate Stitcher to gain control of the Land War Elves.
Here you are.
Thank you.
Yes, and that means that it's different than Hexproof. Hexproof means it can't be the target of spells and abilities your opponents control. Shroud means that you can't even target it with stuff. So Josh, untapping it would have technically been an illegal play.
Yeah, Shroud prevents all players from targeting the creature, even myself, in which case I can't be untapping it. This is a small mistake. A lot of people made a big deal about it, but I had a bunch of creatures out, like Tim at the time. And because Lightning Greaves has an equip cost of zero, it's fine to slide the Greaves to another creature, then target this Fate Stitcher, do all the stuff, then slide the Greaves back. So this doesn't actually affect the game. But yes, we did misrepresent how the rules work in that instance.
And also notably, Matthew did not have any removal.
Yeah.
And we know that because he's going to draw his last card, and you hear him say, I'm just looking for one thing to get rid of the Willbreaker. So it wouldn't have actually mattered if, for instance, if it was all four of us at the table and someone had a removal spell in their hand, we may not have had this mistake because someone had been like, hold on, I need to remove that Fate Stitcher, but it has Shroud. Wait, you can't even target it. So
what they do is they wait for you to move the Lightning Greaves, and then once you have, they go, ha-ha, boom, kill the creature now. Although, if Matthew had a removal spell, he's going to use it on a Willbreaker, not Fate Stitcher. So, yeah, okay, I'm going to pause here because I have a funny story about Cassius. So we were at GP Vegas at the time. This is either last year or the year before.
Last year was Magic Fest, right?
Yeah, and he is playing Locust God, and he's got like a Lightning Greaves, and I forget what he wants to do, but he wants to cast an aura on his Locust God, and I'm like, you got Lightning Greaves on it, you can't do it. And he's like, oh. And I'm like, you could just slide the Lightning Greaves over to this other creature, and then you can do it. He's like, okay, so I'll slide the Lightning Greaves over, and then I'll cast, you know, whatever it was. And I go, hold on, I'll capsize your Locust God. And he he still is mad about it to this day, but he just looked at me with, like, daggers. He was like, all right. Everybody else at the table was like, whoa.
Oh, Josh, what? Oh, geez, bro.
Good thing I know Cassius well.
Yeah, no, I mean, knowing Cassius, too, that would have been an instant concede a moment as well, potentially, right?
No, it was. He's like, I'm done. He had to go catch a plane, too, but he was not
right,
happy
right,
with me.
Right, right. It's like, that's how you want to end my Vegas trip, Josh? All right, I see how it is.
All right, here's another mistake that I made, and this is more of a decision-based mistake than a rules mistake.
Right.
So there's a moment, again, near the end of the game where Matthew attacks me. It's right after Millie has made me use all my activations on my stuff, so I can't actually steal anything. Quote, unquote, I think I can't steal anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he attacks me. And I use a Yavimaya Hollow on my Commander Ludovic and block so that Ludovic gets regenerate.
I have a 9-6 and a 4-3 coming at you.
I will block the 9-6 with Ludovic, and then I will regenerate it with Yavimaya Hollow.
All right.
So I'll take 5 and 4, 9 total.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I go down to 5.
Yikes. And I go up to 35.
And then a lot of people correctly pointed out, well, Josh, Yavimaya Hollow is an activated ability. You could target that at Soul of the Harvest and steal Matthew's creature rather than block with your Ludovic and regenerate it.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're 100% right. I didn't see that line. I wasn't thinking of Yavimaya Hollow being able to target my opponent's creatures, right? It gives regenerate. Why would you ever want to do that?
Yeah, that might actually have you reconsider some of the lands you put in your deck, right? If you're looking at them.
No, I mean, I'm sure I put it in there at the time thinking, like, I could use this.
Right.
But Willbreaker is one card in the deck. It's not like...
It just happens to be one of the best cards, of course.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things about these cards is that we're so used to cards that usually only target your own stuff or can't target or can only target your opponent's stuff, like, for instance, the Meteor Golem, that these are really easy slip-ups to make because, again, you're looking at that point, you're looking at a table of, like, way more cards than everyone else. It's kind of hard to be like, oh, right, this can do this there when you've sort of already developed a plan in your head.
I think this might be just a hole in my own game, too, because this is similar to the... Altar of Dementia moment in the Theros game, where in my brain, I just compartmentalize Altar of Dementia to being a card that I use to mill myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't think of it as a, like, I just sort of pushed it aside when it wasn't useful anymore and kind of like, you know, your brain naturally wants to, like, narrow your complicated board down into the things that matter to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just compartmentalize the stuff incorrectly, and that bit me in the Theros game. Then this game didn't bite me, obviously, because it ended up working out okay and I won. But yeah, I think it's something in my own game that I need to, like, solve or look at, which is this to, like, you know, rethink all my cards. Am I sure I can't use that for this?
Yeah, maybe you should have a little notepad right down. It's like, all right, I can use this now.
There was one rules clarification I wanted to make here. A few people talked about the fact that regenerate is worded a little strangely here, and they thought because of Trample on Soul of the Harvest, which was like a 9-6.
Yeah.
So I block with Ludovic. It's a 1-4. give it regeneration. It's blocking the 9-6. A lot of people were like, well, regeneration says that it removes it from combat, so you should take the full 9 damage from the Soul of the Harvest because it has trample. However, the way the regenerate works is that it prevents the damage and then removes it from combat. So the damage has to be dealt to it, so that 4 damage is gone, so we did do the damage correctly.
Yeah. Regenerate's a really weird mechanic because it taps the creature and then removes it. It's got a whole lot, like, there's a lot to
it. Basically puts the shield on it that then when the damage happens, that stuff happens. It doesn't tap it when you give it regenerate.
Right.
It taps it when the shield is activated, basically. Super weird. Anyway, we did clarify that with some judge people because I was like, did we get that wrong? But no, it's correct.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, okay. So again, that last one was more of a decision-based mistake than a rules mistake. It was maybe a combination of both. We do have some other decision-based mistakes that both of us made in the game. Coming up, we're going to talk about those, but we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, welcome back to the roundtable, the Game Nights roundtable for the Fan Attack of the Fans episode. Let's talk about some mistakes that Josh and I both made that, in retrospect, looking back, maybe we could have played the game a little differently. The first one I think a lot of people mentioned is my strip mine. So I have a strip mine in the deck, it is on the battlefield, and there are lots of very juicy targets. Josh has a Gaia's Cradle. He's got a Bounce Land with a Market Festival line that he can tap and untap and just generate tons and tons of mana. So people are wondering, why didn't you use this on one of those lands immediately? Why didn't you actually just, you know, instead of holding back and waiting and waiting and waiting until right before I died to use it, why not use it earlier? On the trigger, because I'm probably dying, I'm going to use my strip mine on Josh's Gaia's Cradle.
Gaia's Cradle down.
Yeah, there's also a spawning pool that Millie has.
Right.
At one point attacks. I don't remember if she attacks you, but any attack is bad for you just because the top of the deck could deal you a ton of damage. Although I think at that point you had been forced to tap strip mine. So on the attack you couldn't have, but maybe beforehand.
Yeah,
a lot of juicy targets. Yeah. Do you want to talk through what your thinking was?
Well, for me, I think looking at my hand and looking at what I wanted to do, I needed as much mana as possible because I was trying to land Omniscience and other. And like you could tell by the end of the game, every time I had to pay a little extra mana to do something, that Omniscience play was gone. That was, in my mind, the only key to my victory. Whereas, like, I don't really care if Josh makes infinite mana and does stuff. The only thing that matters to me on Josh's board is the fact that he can double ping me, for an example.
Right.
Like, that matters way more than the Gaia's Cradle. So for me, I think I was just trying to hold off and wait until I actually needed to use it. Because I don't think, looking at my hand and looking at what I had, I wasn't worried about dealing with you. Should I be able to get back to that point?
I would say also the fact that I had a Market Festival on a Bounce Land, which makes 4 mana, and a Gaia's Cradle, which basically the most I could ever tap for in that game was 4 mana, made Strip Mine less good because either one you take out, I still have the other one.
Yeah, I think at that point your value engine was so good that
I just needed one land that tapped for a lot. The second one was redundant.
Yeah, not even just redundant. It's like you had more than enough mana to do whatever you needed to do with. And maybe there is a case for me using it the moment I played it to set you back. And looking down the line, maybe that would have stopped one of your turns from being 100%. It could have been a 75% turn.
Right.
And who knows how that would have panned out in the end, too.
Hard to foresee exactly where everything's going to go at that time.
True.
All right. Here's one. On the very last turn, why not protect your Willbreaker, Josh? So I steal a bunch of Matthew's creatures, I smack them, and I'm basically guaranteed going to be able to knock him out next turn. And I just pass the turn. I don't pass my Greaves from my Fate Stitcher to the Willbreaker, which would give it Shroud. And since the one thing Matthew needed to draw was basically a removal spell for the Willbreaker, that would have taken out that line of play.
pass the turn, and on the end step, I will draw two cards again, one for Ludovic and one for the Monarch.
So Josh can 100% kill me next turn. But the thing about Willbreaker is that if it dies, I can get all my stuff back. So it all basically revolves around if I'm able to finally draw that answer for Willbreaker.
Yeah, and maybe swung the game in Matthew's favor.
Yeah, I think at the time, I was really worried about the Fate Stitcher the most sticking around because it was my engine, whereas Willbreaker was kind of my finisher. But I felt like any finisher will do. And worst case scenario, if he removes stuff, I got the Meek Stone. It's not going to untap. So I'm not as worried about it. Whereas removing the Fate Stitcher, I was more scared of. Although, if he got a removal spell, then remove Fate Stitcher and I kept all his creatures, I could still untap a couple of them with my artifacts. And I think I was calculating and I couldn't quite kill him the next turn with the untappers I have. Because remember, Meek Stone affects my creatures too.
Right.
It could have been incorrect. I do remember thinking about it and just deciding, like, listen, if he kills Willbreaker, gets his stuff back, I'm still fine. Whereas if he kills Fate Stitcher, it's a little bit more dicey in my mind at the time. Maybe not right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Well, he didn't draw a removal spell, so that we know how that panned out.
I mean, the worst would have been drawing a board wipe.
Yeah.
In which case, that just shuts off everything, and then, you know, which was possible too, and the Greaves couldn't protect against that anyway, so I guess maybe it doesn't matter.
True.
Okay. I'm going to use that one mana floating, tap this three, to play Damnation.
Yuck.
Boom.
That hurts.
You sure you don't want a wheel?
My hand's too good. In response, I'm going to tap two, and I'll flash out Sensei's Divining Top and use its ability. Tap three cards. I'll put it like that, and then I'm going to activate Arcanus to draw three cards. Okay, this one was definitely a mistake. So there was a board wipe, and I had Arcanus the Omnipotent as well as a Sensei's Divining Top, and instead, when the board wipe happens, obviously I want to use Arcanus to draw cards. So I use Arcanus to, I use the top to look at the top three cards in my library, which I'm going to draw with Arcanus anyway. And then I draw them with Arcanus. So I don't
know. You just want to see what you were going to get before you
did it. Yeah, yeah. I think it was just more of a, I'm just going to do stuff and not thinking it, like maybe taking, I don't know, two more seconds to stop and think about it. So I did lose a bit of advantage there. I could have seen the next three cards after that. I don't think it ultimately made a huge difference in this game, but it would have been a much better sequence to look at six cards potentially instead of just three.
Yeah, I think, it's obviously better to sequence it, draw the three, then look at the three, but yeah. These are things we do all the time in games. And you know, I think one thing with Jimmy and I both is, like, I made a few sequencing mistakes. There was a few people pointed out when I was doing the sort of tappy-untappy stuff, and I left myself, unfortunately, with three mana at the end of the turn and couldn't activate Thrasios, if I just had one more mana, I could have. And in my brain, I had done the calculations, and I was going to have four left at the end, so I was like, oh, I only have three in my pool. I guess I passed the turn. It's because I had missequenced the actions.
You could have done it a little differently.
What I needed to do was play Thrasios and then activate the guy's cradle because it activates for a little more in the middle of that sequence. And I didn't do it. And anyway, to go back to what I was saying, Jimmy and I both have this where it's like, oh, whatever, I messed it up. That is the way magic goes. I'm not going to go back and redo it. I'm going to pass the turn and just live with the consequences of messing it up a little bit. You know, on minor plays like that, I think we'll often leave it in. That, to me, is more true to what magic is and how most of us play it than playing everything perfectly, because that's just not how games actually go most of the time.
Even major plays, like when I tapped all my lands with Price of Glory in the battlefield.
Yeah, you're like, well.
I could have been like, you know what, guys, let me take that back. But I was like, I did it.
Let's just live with it.
I got to fall on the sword, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, that, you know, one of the things Jimmy and I are trying to do with the show and everybody here is kind of show what we love about magic. And to me, like, that is one of the things I like about magic, that you do have to sort of think your stuff through and get it right. And when you get it wrong, it will cost you, and it should cost you.
Yeah,
because that's
absolutely
part of the fun of the game is when you know, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Oh, yes. So.
Okay, here, this is a big one.
Never make a deal with Jimmy, a lot of people commented. Come on now. I make great deals.
I want to call this chapter heading, Let's Break a Deal.
Let's Break a Deal.
So this is the big political deal between Millie and Jimmy.
I have a question. If I was to deal with it, what would I get?
I can offer to deal with another problem.
Ooh, counterspell.
Yeah, you do have counters in your deck. What if you give me immunity to counterspell for a turn?
Wow.
And I won't use anything that I'm casting free of counters on you.
Okay, if you protect me from the Drake for one turn, I promise not to interfere with your next turn.
Okay, that's a pretty good deal. Fist bump?
Fist bump.
Okay.
I'm really glad that Jimmy agreed to the deal. I'm feeling good.
All right, so I'm going to tap 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't like this idea, whatever it is.
I'm going to play Omniscience.
Oh, I don't like this idea at all.
I made that deal.
But sometimes deals have Jimmy's to be broken.
This is such an awkward position to be put in.
I know.
I knew when he was roping in that deal, it was going to be bad.
I was thinking everything like up to expropriate. And I was sitting there being like, I think I'd be okay with it. But Omniscience?
With Vidalcan Ori.
Oh.
You want to lay out what the deal was?
Yes. So,
This is a classic Jimmy deal that Millie walked right into.
Don't do this and give me immunity for a turn.
You were like, I'll destroy this creature that's attacking you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you don't need to take this damage. And Millie's like, yeah, I like that. I like that. And I kind of slide in the deal, like, just don't stop me from doing anything on my next turn.
She basically gives you immunity from counter spells on your turn.
Yeah, and I made it specific and because I knew what I had in my hand was an Omniscience. But I also wanted to downplay what it was because we all knew Millie had the counterspell, right? So it was kind of like, hey, just don't counter my stuff. Like, we all know you have it. And I'll do you a solid. I'll throw you a bone right now instead. And Millie, you know, said yes. And
she didn't want to take the 5. She's at 15.
Yeah, it's pretty low life total. Rurik Thar is running around the battlefield. That's just 2 triggers off of that. Her deck obviously has a lot of non-creature spells as well. So.
I love your little wry smile.
Yeah.
I want to notice, if anybody wants to go back and watch the episode, there's a funny part near the end of the deal where you're kind of like, okay, so, and you're restating what the deal is, and you're trying to, like, say...
I mean, I knew what that was.
Yeah, playing. I won't use the thing that you don't counter against you. You didn't want to say, I won't do anything against you. You just want to say, whatever you don't counter, I won't use it against you.
Yeah, I'm trying to sweeten the pot as much as possible without spoiling what it is I'm about to
you
do.
You didn't want to say, whatever I cast off Omniscience, I'm not going to use against you. Yeah, you were trying to, like, create the correct wording through your lawyers that you would give you the loophole.
Yeah, because Omniscience isn't doing it. It's the thing that cast off of Omniscience. And I think that's, like, a normal, because someone's like, oh, they're going to land a big... scary creature.
Yep.
They're the Braids deck. Maybe they have a crazy Blightsteel Colossus or something. So, yeah, I don't want to get hit by that. So I don't know what Millie thought it was going to cast, but...
Probably. She said all the way up to Expropriate. So yeah. She thought it was going to be bad.
Yeah. And Expropriate, like, maybe I would have, like, I've been like, I'll take your the weakest permanent off your battlefield or something. You know, I would have done something in that case. And so I could see why Millie was like, okay, I can understand how this is going to benefit me. Because I've done this a lot in games, too, where it's like, if I put myself and a friend ahead... then we can know that we can get rid of the other two people, and then we can turn our guns towards each other.
So anyway, she agrees, it goes to Jimmy's turn, he plays the Omniscience, and we have this moment where she's like, oh, geez.
Oh, whoops. That's like, a good card.
I know I made that deal, but I don't know if I should go through with it. Maybe I do need to just counter it. And she thought about it for a little while, and the interesting thing, because this is a something we only do sometimes on the show, but we put up a little graphic that was basically like,
yeah.
What do you think of this specific moment if you were Millie? Would you break the deal or would you keep your word? And as you go through the comments, it's fairly evenly split. I'd say it's probably slightly on the side of keep your word, but it's not like 90% of people saying that.
No, it was very evenly split. Yeah. Going through the comments, I think a lot of people were like, I can't believe she kept her word. Please.
I would break the deal 100%.
I would break that deal immediately, yeah. And to be honest, had she broken the deal in that moment, I don't think I would have actually been that upset because it is legitimately considered one of the most powerful cards ever, especially in Commander and especially in the kind of deck that I was running. So... I know where she was coming from or where the commenters are coming from, but me and a lot of commenters also respect Millie for still sticking to the deal.
I love watching that moment because Matthew's like, some deal's got to be broken. You got to break that deal. I'm just chuckling because I saw this coming, like something bad. I was like, when Jimmy makes this deal, it's going to be horrible.
Yeah, there's
something
up
his sleeve. And you're like sheepishly quiet. You're not even really trying to talk. You're not even putting any pressure like, you can break your word for real. You're just like... I don't know.
I don't know. It's up to you. I mean, you are still technically allowed to play the cards out of your hand because that's how the game of Magic works. There's just another slice to it. I think Millie commented on Twitter something along the lines of like, I'm not going to do something like that in front of thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, she said on our Discord.
Yeah, which,
She was like, I'd be lying if I said that the fact that thousands and tens of thousands and potentially a million people are going to see this and that's not, you know.
That's not chill.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of thing. You would rather be known for having the sweet Yuriko deck instead of the person that broke a deal.
Right.
About this thing, right? Like, there are things that become memorable. Like, I don't want to be memorable for always being mana screwed, but that's how it ends up. I want to be memorable for winning games, but, you know, that's just how it goes.
Also, at the time, I think she pointed out, like, well, Rurik Thar's out, so you can only cast creatures.
Yes.
So Omniscience is, like, not as bad as always. Because it doesn't say you can cast any card out of your hand. It says mm-hmm. you can only cast creature's cards out of your hand, which is bad, but not like... Possibly it's not game-ending. And she ended up being right about that. So yeah. I think that gave just enough, you know... Enough oomph to it where she was like, okay.
I did drop a Kozilek, though, so there
was just for free, at flash speed. All right. So all in all, everyone seems to love these fan episodes. We got a lot of positive response. One of the big ones was people loved the Rurik Thar voices.
Enchantment! Bang!
Smash! And a lot of people thought it was me doing the voices, but it was not. The voice acting for Rurik and Thar were done by two people. You can't do it by the same person because it's two heads.
Yeah, two heads.
So it was Jake Boss and Josh Murphy, the two editors on Game Nights. We're going to show a little video clip here because... We were in the other room, like, working, our whole team is, and you could just hear them from in on the studio.
All the way down
just
the hall.
Yelling like ogres, Smash! Smash! Smash!
And just it's just the
like,
silliest
anywhere
things.
You are in the house, you could just hear it. Everyone's like, what's going on? So Ashlyn grabbed this clip of them doing the voice acting, so let's take a look at that.
Fred Dynamo Bed! You take damage! Smash! Smash! Jimmy Spell Bed! Your spell bad! No non-creature! You take 6 damage!
It's not a bad job.
Not a bad job. Two heads, two editors, and a lot of passion.
Yeah.
I think they're going to make it in this industry. I think they got it.
They had a lot of fun with it. They came out being like, oh, my voice, though. Yeah. Like yelling like that is tough.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool.
There was a lot of praise this time around for the card animations, and people don't actually know who made a lot of them. Only a couple of people, commenters knew. It's actually our in-house editor, Sam Waldo. He does all of the animations, or the majority of them, and this time, you know, we're always trying to make them better and better, and a lot of people loved the Yuriko one. And I love the Yuriko one especially because it had elements to it. Not only do you see Yuriko jumping in the frame, but when she hits the whole table, she does the same thing, zips in and out, and then the life totals get changed. So there's a lot of like different parts to that card that gave the game extra life.
Okay, and then I'm gonna tap 6 mana and play Braids.
Flash in, Rurik Thar.
Smash, smash, smash!
And then I will play Prodigal Sorcerer.
I reveal the top card of my library.
Ooh.
It's a counterspell.
Okay, cool.
We all take 2.
Well, you don't.
Yeah, Sam does an incredible job for the show. You probably, if you went back, you would know the moment Sam joined the team because we started having the characters jump out of the cards mm-hmm. and really start to move and do stuff. And you could see, I think it was Commander 2019 was the first one we really got to use Sam a lot. And that's all Sam does on the show. So Sam is working for... You know, days and days and days, we do a month plus of post-production on each episode, and he's spending, you know, 10, 12, 15 hours sometimes on just the Yuriko animation or mm-hmm. just the Rurik Thar animation, and that's the type of time, the amount of time that stuff like that takes, but it really adds so much to the episodes to just see these cards come to life. So Sam is one of the big reasons that people comment about our production quality so much.
And a lot of people don't realize how hard it is to make these animations because when you take a card like Rurik Thar and he has 2 arms and 2 heads and he's doing something moving around, we don't have the original art. We don't have the original Photoshop files. We're taking as high resolution as we can and then you have to paint in all of the parts that don't exist under the art to move stuff around so that when an arm moves up, you don't see a big gap space there. So there's a lot that just goes into even prepping the card to be prepared for animation. And I think big shout out too to the editing team for doing the sound design on top of it. Because that's what really gives it the impact. Not only is it the motion of him slamming his arms down, but you hear the thud, the metallic grinding, and the voice and all that stuff on top of it. And that really makes it fully come together as like a little package of goodness.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a team effort. And, you know, all of us, Jake and Murph are really getting in there a lot too, are working with Sam and being like, okay, so here's what could we do here? How will it work? We're all often explaining to Sam how the card sort of story-wise works. Like, you know, this is a big dumb ogre and he's going to scream big dumb ogre stuff. Can we move the mouth? He's got to smash the life totals. What can we do? Originally, we were going to try and have him like move his fist and punch the life totals, but sometimes the card's on the right side. Sometimes it's on the left. The arm itself that's in the picture is very short. It would be hard to extend it. So we kind of worked it through and came up with the idea, well, what if the axe just flies in from off screen, hits the life total? And I think Jake or Murph was like, oh yeah, then the then the phone itself can crack, you know, where hit. And so it's really a team effort of everybody coming up with these elements and figuring out how it's going to work. So yeah. Kudos to everybody.
Big, big time kudos. A lot of people commented on my Steven Universe shirt the intro, mid-roll, and outro. Turns out the day we're recording this, it's the actual finale of the show. It's been going for a long, long time. I love it. We've done a lot of stuff for Steven Universe on Feast of Fiction, my cooking show. So that's why I actually have 3 copies of that shirt.
It's good to represent.
Yeah.
Okay, a big question we got from a lot of people is, when will we be doing the fan auditions again? They thought it looked really fun, and they wanted to be sitting in Millie and or Matthew's seat, or Jacob's from a couple years ago. Will we be doing the fan auditions again?
Yes, absolutely. But we are actually not sure when we're going to do it. Typically, when we do the fan episodes is when we announce the fan audition process. But with everything that's going on in the world, it does not feel appropriate to be saying, hey, come in physically to the studio if you get this audition so that we can, you know, because like,
yep.
Everything's being scaled back right now, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. But we will do them again because it's one of our favorite episodes to do, and it's obviously one of your favorite episodes to watch.
We also have to do them because everybody who supported our Kickstarter last year, well, not everybody, but if you were at a certain tier or above, you get the opportunity to audition for the show already. And patrons, you will also get the opportunity to audition for the next fan episode for next year. Again, we're just not sure when that's going to be. When we know, you'll know.
Yes. Just always, again, pay attention to the podcast. We'll always mention it here, and we will always, always, always mention it on our Patreon as well as Twitter and pretty much all of our social stuff.
Speaking of the Kickstarter, after seeing the coin, the Knight coin we were using as the Monarch token in this episode, a lot of Kickstarter backers are probably wondering what the status is of the Kickstarter stuff. So we've got coins, and there's t-shirts, and there's some other
physical things
that people who back the Kickstarter are due to get. And I'll be honest, like, we would have hoped that you would have gotten this stuff already. But again, the COVID crisis shut down a lot of manufacturing all over the world, shut down a lot of shipping all over the world. So
distribution, all the aspects of how we get this stuff from when it's created to your inbox and your mailbox has been changed and altered or shut down or slowed down.
So honestly, from our end, it's been designed, it's been ordered, it's been paid for. But because of everything going on in the world, it's just taking a long time for everything to actually happen. And that's just, it's just the way that things are going in the world right now. Obviously, everybody hopes that things can be back to normal sooner rather than later. And as soon as it is, that stuff will get to you as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, and we do appreciate everyone's understanding in this matter. This is obviously something that's affecting everyone's lives in very different ways. And this is just one of the ways that it's affecting us. So much appreciated.
All right, and that can transition us into the last talking point here, which is the COVID crisis. So obviously, COVID-19... a lot of people were making references to it in the comments and stuff.
I did say something in the show too, which is like, if someone, I die if someone breathes on me, and someone said, oh, very timely. And like, I did not, this is not on purpose. I'm not trying to make light of anything.
That was probably our fault. I didn't really think of that context when we were editing it. I'll say, first of all, the fan episode was recorded in October.
Yeah.
So Jimmy recorded that interview in October. That's before coronavirus was even a thing at all on anybody's radar. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are not just making references to social distancing and stuff in the interview, which I think is kind of tongue-in-cheek. People know we record these things a long time ago.
Yeah. We're not like being like, well, even with this crisis going on, we still got to get this Game Nights episode out so we endanger everyone in the process. No, we recorded it way back in the day.
Yeah, so people have just been asking in general how that's affecting us, how we're dealing with it, how it's going to affect our content. So first off, that Game Nights was recorded in October. We do have another Game Nights that was recorded about 5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's the Ikoria Commander stuff. And so that was recorded before COVID. We're going to be able to work on it. So for that, we're good. We did have to cancel an episode that we were planning to record, though,
next week.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we're not sure what the status of the next episode is going to be, because we don't know when we're even going to be able to record it. We can't ask people to get on planes right now. We really don't want to have... We're in a small room. There's 2 of us in it right now. But for Game Nights, there's 10 people in here. And that's a bad idea right now. So we're just going to...
And people are handling cards. They're doing a lot of what you're not supposed to be doing. Yeah.
So we're going to wait until it's safe to record that episode. So it very probably this whole coronavirus thing is going to delay Game Nights specifically. At some point in the near future, we may skip an episode. We may just try and fit another one in later. We don't know.
It's not the only thing being delayed. WotC, Wizards of the Coast, announced a few days ago at this point now that they're delaying Ikoria, the main set, as well as the Commander Precons, the release specifically in North America, Latin America, Australia, and New Zealand until
and
May. And Europe, right. Until May 15th. The original release date was April 24th. And the sets are going to release on time in Asia and as planned on digital. So you're actually still going to be able to play it online on Arena and MTGO. However, because of the current situation, they are waiting, and I believe they're going to move the pre-release events for Ikoria into the release day events as well and sort of combine those two.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, in middle of May.
But that doesn't change the schedule of the preview cards. It doesn't change the schedule of when they're going to be revealing what's in these decks and all that stuff. So that is actually not going to necessarily affect our content.
Yeah, it'll probably affect it somehow, but it's just hard to know. This is unprecedented. This whole situation in the world is unprecedented.
First time it's ever happened in anyone's lives, something like this.
We're going to link the article from Wizards in the show notes, just if you weren't aware of the delay and how that's working out. Again, the previous season and everything, the spoilers are going to work the same because the sets are releasing in certain areas of the world and on digital, so the cards will still be known. Mm-hmm. We had actually been planning for this moment up to 2 months ago because, you know, when you do content like we do, all of a sudden they say, okay, a commander set's coming out and a regular set. And we're like, well, what do we usually do for the commander product? Usually that's in August, and August tends to be our craziest month because of the commander product.
Yep.
And then if you just put a regular set, boom, on top of that. So we're like, okay, how are we going to do all this? Well, the best way is to start early.
And get as much out of the way as possible so that we have the footage and it's ready to be edited so we don't have to rush and edit at the same time in the weeks leading up to it.
So we've actually had the team going and cutting on a lot of the episodes for the Ikoria, both Commander and main set stuff, for a while. So we have a backlog of episodes planned before all this craziness hit. Then all this stuff happens and all of a sudden we are scrambling to try and figure out how do we get our team to be able to work from home so that everybody can stay safe. So, you know, we can follow the safe at home ordinances mm-hmm. as much as possible. Now, we're a media company, so we are considered an essential business. We can still technically run. However, we want our employees to be safe. We want
and
them
to feel safe as well. Yeah. And we want you guys to know that we respect, obviously, everyone that works with us, and we don't want to be putting anyone into an uncomfortable situation.
There are people that need to work right now, right? Police officers, medical people, whatever. Our podcasts and stuff, people need to work because they need the income, but we aren't essential. So we don't want to, like, no, everyone's still coming into work every day.
Yeah.
However, setting people up to be able to work remotely is complicated for
it's
a whole
hurdle.
Bunch of reasons. But
we're working with big media files. We're working with a lot of footage as well.
Confidential
as
IP.
You need a lot of processing power to be able to do this stuff as well. So there's a lot of elements. It's not just like, hey, just get on your laptop and you can join the workday. It's like you actually need a lot more than just that.
Think about what we were talking about with the animations for game nights just a second ago, how often we are sitting in with Sam in a group and throwing ideas around and figuring out what's, well, that's just a lot harder to do. I know obviously there's Slack and Skype and all these things, but this is not easy because creative disciplines are a lot about nonverbals and a lot about, you know,
the energy in the room. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
Multiple people in a room looking at something, be like, oh, what if it was like this, and just throwing out ideas. So
yeah,
anyway.
Sometimes you bang your head against the wall for 10 hours in the same room. Like, if like writers' rooms, they need to be all together and they're really contributing to something together as well.
So anyway, everyone is working from home here as much as possible. Jimmy and I are the only ones here. I was the only one here all day yesterday. It's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. So it's definitely going to affect our content in some way, but because of that backlog of episodes that we are already working on, we think in the near future we're going to be able to handle the Commander release. And then maybe our set reviews and some other videos are just a little bit slower than they normally would be. But they've delayed it here in the U.S., so maybe that won't be as such of a big deal. We're also not sure exactly how to handle it now that they've delayed it, because we've never had a situation where the cards are known, but the cards you won't be able to get the cards for like, you know, 2 months. So I don't even know what the strategically best timing is to release videos. Like, everyone's gonna be excited right when they see the cards for the first time, but
about them and want to hear more about them, but
you won't be able to get them for a long time. So whatever, we'll figure that out. We'll, you know, obviously there's still a lot on our end that we just don't know. So we're doing our best.
This is going to be a tougher time for the podcast as well. Magic is not an essential. You don't need to eat a Magic card to stay alive every day. Some people might argue otherwise, But, you know, this is something that's going to affect us as a podcast. It's going to affect our sponsors. You know, it's going to affect a lot of different things. It's going to be, revenue is definitely going to be hit by this because, again, a lot of people are filing for unemployment now. There's also a huge thing that, like, these companies cannot necessarily run in this current environment. And that means that we cannot you know, they can't send stuff out to you, and we can't be sending you somewhere if they can't send stuff out to you. So there's a lot of different things that are going to go on that are going to affect how we have to deal with it and talk about it. And we just want to be as transparent as possible with everyone out there. And your support, as always, matters now more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to be transparent again, yeah, we're facing lower revenue because, you know, sponsors are going to pull back. Makes total sense for them because a lot of them can't even run their businesses right now.
Yeah, they're not even open.
And we know a lot of people out there are, you know, losing their jobs or getting cut back on the hours of their jobs, again, because if you're not an essential business, you're forced to close down. And mm-hmm. just for safety, you know, a lot of businesses are doing the responsible thing and not having their employees come into work. But this is having, obviously, an economic impact on everybody and everything. And we're no different.
Well, not to mention, too, we had that big Game Nights Kickstarter last year because we wanted to expand the team, hire more people, add more production value in. And that's the sort of thing that we were hoping to carry into the entire year.
We may have done that at the worst possible time. We didn't. It was like right at the moment we're like, yes, we got all our stuff and we hired everybody. Yeah. And they're like, hold on. That
hold
was bad.
On. Yeah, hold on. How about no one works? So that was definitely something that has been a bit of a kick in the butt for us. But it's something that we are, again, we're just going to do our best. And we're going to keep trying to make this content for you guys as great as possible and as consistently as possible. But we are obviously running into a lot of hurdles.
Yeah, but what you said there is absolutely it, right? We're gonna do our best. And I like to think Jimmy and I are pretty good at all of this. So I think, like, Command Zone will be fine. There will be content. There will probably be stuff that happens where, you know, we obviously have to acknowledge what's going on in the world, and there may be delays or stuff that's abnormal from our content as far as like release schedule and stuff like that. We hope mm-hmm. you'll roll with all the punches like we are, but we're going to try and take care of our team and our people and do the best we can. And we really do appreciate everybody out there who's still able to support us and help us out, because that is going to, you know, make it so that we can keep going.
Yeah, rainy weather right now. And that is definitely, our patrons are the shining people that support us the most. And again, your patronage is actually literally keeping the lights on around here at this point.
All right. So having said all that, let's move in here to talking about our sponsors. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. That's our affiliate link. If you're still able to order cards, you know,
that's the place to go.
That's the place to go.
That is still the place to go.
We should say that Card Kingdom is facing reduced operations because of the COVID-19 crisis. So you need to check their website for details about, because we don't want you to order cards thinking everything's normal and they don't come on time. Things are changing daily. So at the time we record this, I don't want to say like what exactly is going on with them, but you should check. But if you're watching this maybe 4 months down the road and everything's fine, then please use cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Just double check. I do want to say that one thing Card Kingdom is doing to sort of stay active in the community during this time period.
Yes, this is great.
Yeah, is they started a new show called Magic is Gathering. Oh. Our good friend Kevin Harland is hosting that. And you can watch that. They're streaming it on their Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/cardkingdom. Mm-hmm. You can watch the VODs of the past episodes, but they're planning to do multiple episodes. They don't know exactly how long it's going to go on for, but definitely something cool that they're doing to just, again, stay active in the community, which I think is great.
Yeah, so big shout out, as always, to Card Kingdom. They've been very awesome with us and to us, as well as to the people that order from the website. So again, your continued support of the website and, you know, just checking in to see where they're at and when you can buy product, we very much appreciate you using the affiliate link, as always. Ultra Pro, of course, another amazing sponsor of the show. You see their playmats on every episode of the Game Nights. You see their deck boxes, sleeves, and all the accoutrement that adorns our battlefield. Obviously, they are a business that has been hit hard by COVID-19 as well. We received word that they had to shut down a lot of the distribution centers. However, that doesn't mean that Ultra Pro product is still not in stores. Everything that's there right now, if you do happen to purchase any of it off a website or wherever you end up going, you're still supporting the show. And obviously, they need your help as well right now. It's one of those situations where it's like, I wish that, again, people need to eat a playmat every day to survive, but it's not the case. But it still is something that I think is, you know, has a lot of sentimental value to me, the playmats I have in my house, the ones we use here on set and all that stuff. So, and not to mention, it is a way to keep your stuff clean.
Yep.
And that's obviously a very big concern in general in the world right now. So big thanks, as always, to Ultra Pro.
Yep. And finally, our Patreon, if you go to patreon.com/commandzone, that's where you can support us directly. Our patrons right now are really keeping us afloat. Thank you. Thank you so much to everybody out there who is supporting. There are some good perks. You can hang out with Jimmy and I on Discord.
Yep.
We're on there each and every day almost.
More now.
Yeah. We have a little more time now. Game nights you get to watch early. There's some other stuff. I do want to say, We've gotten some messages, and we understand that it's rough out there, and people are, again, getting laid off or facing reduced hours and having to tighten their belts. And we don't want our Patreon to be a financial burden on anyone. So do not feel guilty if you're like, hey, I got to do things like pay rent and buy food, and the Patreon is not something I can support right now.
Yeah.
Don't even feel like you have to apologize or anything to us for that. Please cancel your Patreon, and hopefully when the world turns back around,
yeah, we look forward to seeing
to seeing you come back. But I don't want anybody to in any way feel that the Patreon is a burden on them. If you can support and you're in a financial situation where that's going to be comfortable for you, it would be great if you could, because again, these are going to be lean times for us.
Yep.
But obviously take care of yourself, take care of your family, make sure that you can pay your essential bills. That's by far the most important thing. Don't in any way feel a burden that you have to even tell us.
Yeah, and we know for a fact that those of you that love the show and want to support us, if you need to cancel or lower your monthly limit right now, we can't wait to see you back on the other side of things, because we're going to be here with the same open arms as we always have been. It's not something that we ever want to guilt trip people about. The number one most important thing is your safety, like Josh said, and your family's, and your loved ones and the ones closest to you. So make sure you prioritize that, not just now, but always.
Yeah, and everybody out there who's not a Patreon supporter and never has been, it is still, everybody, stay safe out there, be smart, follow all the guidelines. We're doing our best to do so, and
Yeah, and like we said, if you want to audition for Game Nights in the future, we will be doing that. You have to be a patron of the show, but we're not obviously going to be doing that right now because of everything we just talked about.
Yeah, you'll be able to join the Patreon at that point to audition, and we're going to do that at a time when the economy hopefully is in a better place, because we want more people to be able, feeling like they can do it. We don't want it to be like, boy, I really can't afford this, but I'd really like to do it. Listen, we're just going to try and do the best we can, as we said. So,
And the reason that we do these episodes, the reason we have a Patreon, is because we really value the contribution of fans and what you guys have to say as well. So that's why it's there. It's going to still be there in the future. And we thank everyone that is a current patron or is going to return as one as well.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for today. We've got a bunch of content coming up, though, because there are, like we said, preview cards coming for Aquaria, the main set, the Commander product. We've got deck reveals. We've got deck upgrade guides. We've got a ton coming. You should probably hit the subscribe button on YouTube so you get the hit the notification bell too, so that you're told when all the new content is coming out, because there's going to be a lot of it in the coming weeks. Because again, we've got that stuff all backlogged. It's already done, so we're just going
to
release it.
Yeah, and even if you can't get the physical cards, that doesn't mean you can't brew with the digital ones online and talk to us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. We're still here for you guys. We're not going anywhere. We're just dealing with this like everyone else is out there, so we appreciate the support as always.
All right, everybody, stay safe out there.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JF Wong and @Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.